You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, well, we're happy to be joined today by Wall Street Journal senior sports reporter Rachel Bachman, who covers the Olympics, college sports, and the business and finance of women's sports. And Rachel, it's good to have you here this week. Thank you for being flexible with your schedule. Obviously, with all the illness going around, you know, things are having to be shaken up all the time. But thank you for joining us today. And it's good to have you here because we have the college volleyball national semifinals and national championship coming up this week. So you recently wrote an article about the rise in volleyball. It's a golden age of volleyball, per the headline. And I was curious, you know, obviously, I don't think there's been too many volleyball games on Nielsen rated TV this year. So the usual metrics I would look at are not necessarily indicative. So I wanted to know, because I get the sense that there's some growth and some interest. What are you seeing in volleyball that is compelling and pointing to a golden age?
Well, first of all, thanks for having me. What I've seen really is growth from the lowest levels to the highest levels. And that always gets my attention because I'm just interested inherently in bigger trends in sports. So things like high school volleyball participation among girls jumping 8% in 10 years, which is really notable because a few of those years were the pandemic when a lot of sports contracted in participation. Growing at the club level, you know, volleyball clubs are exploding. And then as I noted in the story, there are a couple of years ago, there were no women's professional volleyball leagues, at least indoor volleyball. And in a couple of years, we could have as many as four of them. So that gives you an idea of what I call sort of the prospect or gold rush in trying to cash in on the popularity and growth of volleyball.
And it's interesting you bring up the growth at the school level because a lot of sports are seeing decline. Gymnastics is a sport that is kind of popularly discussed as one that's kind of on the cusp, but I believe the participation rates in that have really fallen off dramatically since the USA Gymnastics scandal. So, and of course, football, we all know concussions and everything that's gone on there. So are there any other sports in the same class as volleyball, or is this just kind of the exception while everybody else is seeing decline?
Really, among the large number of participation sports, so things like track and field and basketball, softball, soccer, those are the big sports for girls. No sport has grown like volleyball has in the last 10 years. And so it really is an outlier in that way. And I do think coincidentally, sort of, or concurrently, it's the club game that's really driving it. And it's harder to track those metrics because there's not one organization that tracks all of them, but every person I talked to said the club space is exploding. One thing I think volleyball is benefiting for is, as I've written also recently, the decline in popularity of girls' high school basketball, which is a sort of a complex trend in and of itself. But obviously, in both cases, you have tall girls who are interested in doing this, who tend to excel in both sports. And so I don't think it's a coincidence that volleyball has risen at the same time that basketball has fallen off in recent years.
I know you'd written an article about this and it kind of got a little bit of pushback on it as well, but why would you say basketball has kind of seen a bit of an erosion?
Well, it's very difficult to generalize because, as you know, this is a complicated country. One reason, for instance, is the closure of rural schools. So there were many more schools that had basketball teams, for instance, than teams in some other girls' sports, for instance, volleyball, soccer even. And so in some cases, you know, schools would close and that team would just sort of vanish. And, you know, those students would go to another school where it would be consolidated. Some younger kids don't like to run as much as basketball requires. Some girls don't like the contact of basketball, which again is sort of interesting because we see basketball somewhat declining as girls wrestling has been on the rise. So this is what makes it so difficult to generalize. I think in basketball's case, there's a whole bunch of factors that contribute. But there's also a factor of, I think, you know, it used to be on top, it used to be number one. And anything that's, you know, has the very highest rate could always fall off because it's sort of the prime candidate to see erosion from competition.
Rachel, John knows this. I am the father of twins, 14-year-old twins that are freshmen in high school. And it's interesting. They played recreational basketball. They do not play club like you're talking about, do not play volleyball. But along the same lines, they're tall. I'm tall. You can't tell this because I'm sitting down, but I'm 6'3" and a half, almost 6'4". So they're going to end up being tall. And so automatically everybody thinks, do you play basketball? Will you play volleyball? And for a lot of their friends, it's interesting. They have numerous friends that maybe were playing the recreational basketball, but exactly like you're talking about, they've kind of gravitated to volleyball. Again, this is in no way indicative of the whole country. I'm just giving you a small sample in the Tampa, St. Pete, Clearwater area, not exactly maybe a volleyball hotbed to begin with, but there is obviously some interest at the club level in volleyball. Their friends, I hear about this, the tournaments that are going on, and you do have to choose because in most cases, the sports are running simultaneously and you can't really be committed to both of them. So I think it's a very valid point. I thought I would just add that to the mix in our own household that we've seen example of that.
And increased sports specialization has affected all high school sports in particular, because even if the seasons don't run concurrently, there is pressure from club coaches in particular, sometimes even high school coaches, to concentrate on one sport. So that's where you see kids who might have been three sport athletes 15 years ago dropping out of one or two and concentrating on one.
Can I do a parental PSA on the sportsmediawatch.com podcast? Dr. John Lewis, am I allowed to do that?
Of course.
If those coaches only want your son or daughter to play one sport with all of this, ask them, first of all, when you grew up, did you only play one sport when you were in junior high and high school? And see if they swallow the apple core, as I like to say. And the second thing is, if you're telling me that my son or daughter is going to get a scholarship, are you guaranteeing me a scholarship just from your sport that they shouldn't try anything else? Are you giving me that guarantee, coach? See again what the reaction is. This is the TJ public service announcement on how to help in the back and forth with only play my sport. I'm just throwing that out there, Rachel, trying to make everybody smile and give them a heads up. There we go.
And probably most persuasive from college coaches I've spoken to, including Stanford's Tara Vanderveer, a very decorated coach. They prefer athletes who are multi-sport. So they think it makes them less inclined to burn out, less inclined to get injured. So that's the ultimate rebuttal to parents who want their kids to specialize.
There we go on that. John, I didn't mean to sidetrack it. I just had that out there. Go ahead.
Well, I was curious, you know, we talk about volleyball and basketball. Do you think volleyball at the college level, let's just look at NCAA, has a brighter future than basketball, or, you know, in the long run? Because right now, basketball is still pretty well ahead. You're getting 4 or 5 million for the national championship. You're getting a nice, healthy 1 million for the volleyball title, too, but it's still a big gap.
That's a great question. It's hard to say because we forget all of these sports, especially women's sports, are really in their infancy in terms of monetizing them. And I could go on about that for a long time, but you're right. Basketball is still quite a bit ahead. And that's for a number of reasons. I think people love the NCAA tournament format. It's very understandable. It's it runs just about concurrently with the men's tournament. So it's really easy to follow. Of course, I think the ultimate advantage of college sports are these brands that are already well known. If you say Nebraska, nobody has to explain what that means. You know, whereas fledgling professional leagues, they're all new. They don't necessarily have a connection to existing leagues. And so that's a huge mountain to climb. But that's also an advantage for volleyball. You know, I do think some of the success that volleyball is seeing is because of initiatives like I wrote about from the Big Ten Network, where they realized about 7 years ago that volleyball was already pretty popular, looking at the ratings nationwide, but they thought they could make it even more popular by strategically promoting it. And the way they did that was to actually schedule high profile volleyball matches to follow Big Ten football games and then promote those volleyball matches during the football games. And this was hugely successful on the Big Ten network. And they've gotten some record ratings just this year with that strategy. And I think they'll continue to do it. So in that way, I mean, if they keep doing that, if other, you know, like the SEC network and other outlets go that route, I think it really help boost volleyball, since as we know, football has this enormous following and platform already, and it already has the built-in brand loyalty for the universities. But I think it's yet to be seen sort of how much volleyball can grow, because it is really, as something that people watch regularly outside of the Olympics, it really is still kind of in its infancy.
Just out of curiosity, is there men's volleyball? Because I don't believe there is.
There is.
In college there is, yes.
Yeah, yeah. There's, but I think, I forget, I put it in the story, it's either five or six times as many Division I women's teams as men's teams. So they do exist, but at a much smaller level. Right. So when I wrote about volleyball, that's one reason I focused on women and girls, because that's where the overwhelming number of teams are.
And Rachel, isn't it the case most of it is in the West? A lot of it is in the West. I'm not saying it's all in the West, but in terms of male volleyball, a lot of it is the Western schools, more so than, let's say, the Southeast where I am. It's not as much.
You know, I didn't look at that, but that's probably true. I know historically the sort of the power center of men's volleyball is California. So there is actually a nominally professional men's volleyball team, which I mentioned in the story as well. They don't actually pay salaries, so you could debate whether that's professional, but that launched in 2019. Interestingly, they also want to launch a women's league. They're one of the four that want to launch. So even the nominally men's league wants to launch a women's league too.
Yeah. The reason I ask is, you know, I put together my volleyball schedule on the site. I couldn't find any men's games anywhere. Yeah. And gymnastics, very similar. There's tons of women's gymnastics. When they say Friday night, what is it? Friday night flights. What is it that ESPN does? Friday night heights. Right. When they do that, they're not airing. I don't think they've ever aired a men's meet on ESPN. So what do you think accounts for the fact that, given the huge disparity we have in men's and women's sports generally, where men's are overrepresented, even beyond the ratings gap? Like, it's like 99-1. But when it comes to volleyball and gymnastics, it is the exact opposite. You can't find men's volleyball or men's gymnastics on TV. What do you think accounts for that?
My guess is that it is an evolution of how college athletic departments have chosen to implement Title IX. So you look at athletic departments, and where does most of the money go? It goes to football, men's basketball. And that's also because those are the sports that tend to generate the most revenue. So if you look at men's sports and sort of filling out the program, it doesn't really behoove athletic departments to have a lot of men's teams when they have to essentially play catch up on the women's side, so they're not completely lopsided. And the thing that sort of tips the balance at most places is football, because football rosters are 100+ and there's no women's equivalent. And so there tend to be sometimes more women's teams than men's. And so it's a bit convoluted to explain, but generally speaking, you know, as you know, running athletic departments is expensive and running teams is expensive. And so, college athletic departments tend to pick the programs that can generate the most interest and revenue. And in terms of gymnastics, that tends to be on the women's side. Historically, that's what people want to watch. Historically, I think that's partly because of the Olympics. The women's Olympic gymnastics is extremely popular. And so I think that carries up and down the sport. And same with volleyball. I mean, I think it's in other countries, men's volleyball is quite popular, probably more so than this country. But for whatever reason, college athletic departments have not jumped on the bandwagon to create teams. And I think it's largely because they've chosen to sink their resources into, you know, just a handful of the men's teams that generate the most revenue.
Interesting stuff. We could talk more about volleyball, of course, but I do want to get your thoughts on some other issues. In particular, Brittany Griner just returning to the U.S. After 10 months in Russia, being incarcerated. You know, we see all the controversy. It gets ugly, right? People who are seemingly upset that Brittany Griner has been released, people who are saying, well, how could you let her out but not Paul Whelan? Then you have the people who are now trying to diminish Paul Whelan and say that, oh, well, he was discharged from the military. It all gets to, you know, people kind of feeding on each other here. And I do wonder, though, for Brittany, right? We have no idea what's going to come of her career. It seems almost impossible to go 10 months in a prison and then just go back to playing. But she did just the other day do a workout. What do you think if she returns to basketball, her impact will be on the WNBA, the popularity, the attention? Is this just one of those deals that, you know, it's just going to be that controversy and that's it? Or will people really start following her career more closely?
Well, I think, first of all, we're not certain she will come back because, as you hinted at, we don't really know what happened with her when she was in Russia. We don't know about her physical well-being, her emotional well-being, and sort of where she's at. At the same time, you know, there's some, a colleague of mine, Robert O'Connell, wrote a story published today about just sort of the pros and cons of, you know, what she does next. And there are sports psychologists who say there's a real advantage to joining a team, rejoining a team, that, you know, it is a feeling of togetherness and support that really might help her in her recovery. In terms of her reception, I think the league definitely and its fans absolutely wrapped their arms around her. And so I think she would absolutely generate attention. If she returns to the court, she does return to competitive play and, you know, tours the country playing at visiting, you know, away arenas. I think she'll absolutely attract attention. Whether that will translate into things like, you know, higher TV ratings, it's hard to say, but it might have something to do with her play. You know, above all else, America loves a winner. It's a little bit hard to say now because there's so many unknowns about this whole situation.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Yeah. Do you think that this is the most compelling story the WNBA has ever had if she comes back? I mean, is this something that would ultimately, we're talking about a league that's been around for nearly 30 years. I can't think of anything that would be more dramatic than Brittany Griner coming back to play.
This story definitely has transcended the league in a way that perhaps no other story has. There were some early stories in the league with former Olympians, for instance, or ongoing Olympians competing, and very famous, very accomplished women and so on. But her story really transcended basketball. And I think in that way, you're absolutely right. It would provide sort of a comeback story in a way that the league has never seen. And I think that could be tremendously valuable, provided, of course, she wants to do it. She wants to come back, and it's something that she does willingly.
Okay, we always have fun with these. I usually put them to John, but Rachel, since you're our guest, I'll put them to you. Let's just have fun. Who gets the first big interview with her? I have my thought on who it might be that sits down and gets to hear all about this. Rachel, you're our guest. Ladies first. Who do you think, if she does want to do it, and I think she will at some point, who gets that? Who gets the get? What do you think?
I would guess, if I just had to guess, either Robin Roberts or Oprah.
There you go. I was along those lines. John Lewis, did you have a guess?
I was going to say Robin Roberts. I think Robin Roberts at this point, I'm not saying she's bigger than Oprah, but Oprah's on OWN, and she can get prime time on CBS if she wants. But Robin Roberts is on TMA every single day. I think it'll be Robin Roberts.
I thought the name Holly Rowe, too, might be in the comfort zone because she covered her in her college career, obviously, and now in the WNBA. But Robin Roberts is a former Division I player in college basketball in Good Morning America. And again, the tie-in with the WNBA, ESPN, and ABC. We'll put a note out there that maybe it should be Rachel Bachman. Maybe Rachel should get to sit down with Brittany Griner. We're on your bandwagon right now for coming on the podcast. I just thought I would throw that out there while we're kissing up to the guests. John, what else?
Yeah, why not? That would be certainly interesting. I do think that it will be a big deal, probably too big for ESPN to get that interview. That ABC would get that. I can't see ESPN getting it. Notice
you see ABC primetime conversation written all over this with Robin Roberts because of the tie to the WNBA, John, you think? And I see Rachel nodding too.
I do. The only thing, and Rachel kind of alluded to this, is if Brittany wants to do it. Brittany Griner is a very quiet person. That's kind of one of the ironies here. Her Twitter account hasn't been updated since, 2017? I'm honestly surprised they found any quotes from her about Black Lives Matter, because she is not at all outspoken. And I don't mean that as a criticism. It's just her personality. She's a very kind of quiet personality. So it's entirely possible she chooses not to do an interview, not to write a book. She might never discuss this publicly, for all we know.
Fair enough. Fair enough on that.
All right. So we obviously are in the middle of the World Cup. This has been an event that's been very much overshadowed by the death of Grant Wall. Now, Grant Wall's brother said today he no longer believes that foul play was involved. But, obviously you cover the Olympics. The IOC and FIFA are two organizations that are certainly of questionable morality and ethics, right? And we have seen over time, these events have been played in countries that are also kind of questionable morality and ethics. What do you think the future holds for the IOC and FIFA in terms of where these events are being held? Because it feels like this has finally reached critical mass with Russia and Qatar hosting in back-to-back years in the World Cup on the men's side, and China getting the Olympics this time around. The sports washing debate.
It's a great question. I don't think we know yet. The news that's coming out of the IOC in recent days, as you've probably seen, has been pretty alarming to some in Europe, and that is that many in the Olympic movement are ready to welcome back Russian athletes, even if the war in Ukraine continues. And to me, that's sort of a signal that these very, very large sports bodies in some part are motivated through inclusivity. And in some ways, some people think, that can take on sort of a negative tone in terms of including people who others think shouldn't be included. So the IOC, for instance, has so far said no to Qatar for hosting the Olympics. My question is, will that change now that Qatar has all of these venues? Because one of the IOC's objections is building sort of superfluous facilities. Well, now Qatar has them. It has many facilities. It could hold events. I think that that is something definitely to be watched. There are a number of countries, including Saudi Arabia, that want to host events that others might question. The other question that I think people are going to have to face is climate change, because, of course, this World Cup was relocated, pushed back to December from its usual slot because of warm temperatures, typically warm temperatures in that region. And so if other countries in that region want to host these events in the future, that is going to be another huge issue. Will other broadcasters, will other countries' broadcasters agree to that? And in the case of the Olympics, I think it's a much bigger issue because you have the U.S., where they're paying the most for rights globally. I don't think that's true for FIFA. I think FIFA, the rights fees are much more spread out around the world. In the US, or in as far as the Olympics, the US pays the single largest rights fee for to broadcast the games. And so, of course, it's going to have influence about when the games are broadcast. And mm-hmm. I think the US would strongly argue against Olympics, for instance, that competed with the NFL. I think that's the last thing on earth they would want. So there are issues beyond the ethical issues and the, you know, the host country sort of politics issues that I think will have to be looked at in terms of these. Some of these issues overlap, in other words.
Yeah. Do you think we'll ever get to the point where there's just a rotation? We see this with the Final Four, Super Bowl, you know, a set number of, you know, Western countries, you know, the United States, the UK, France, Spain, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, we're talking every 4 years. So that's like a 20-year cycle that you could have for one of these events. Do you think we'll ever get to that point?
I think we will. And I think we'll actually will get it with the Winter Olympics first, because as I said, the climate change issue is really coming to the forefront with snow sports. So, you know, the Olympics are getting more unpredictable in terms of where they can be held, the Winter Games in particular. So, and I also think there will be pushback from other countries if the rotation includes only, for instance, you know, North America and Europe, or North and South America and Europe, because they will contend. And I think they'll have a point that, you know, those are not inclusive events. Those are not true global events if they don't include events in Africa and maybe in the Mideast and in Asia. So the, you know, both those entities, FIFA and the IOC, are going to have to balance all of these competing interests. And sometimes that means, you know, having games in a place like Beijing where it's cold enough, but, you know, there are very few of these events typically there. It's a very unnatural snow sports environment in many other ways, but it's cold enough. So, you know, they still are sort of a place that can hold these events in that respect.
Two interesting things. One, you alluded to this. The United States pays staggeringly more than any other country to televise the Olympics in particular. And that's one of the main reasons why the Olympics have continued to this point, because there was a lot of talk, even in recent years, that it was going to die out. But NBC re-upped and paid billions and billions and billions and pumped it in for at least two more Olympics to be coming in Paris in the United States. So that's obviously part of it. The next thing that I think is interesting is look what happened in Athens, Greece. Look what happened in Brazil, where when you don't talk about the rotation and the countries that are more integrated with all of this, you have stadiums that are now decrepit, economies that are crippled because they spent all this money to build stadiums and venues that have no use after the games are over with. So John, to your point, that makes the stronger argument for having a rotation, I believe, on more stable, economic, established countries that have hosted Olympics before and have all the venues, as opposed to moving it around. That's just my thought to add to the discussion. Yeah.
That's an excellent point, because, you know, I'm talking so much about authoritarian countries, you know, Russia, dangerous countries. Some of it too is, you know, sometimes the Olympics can be dangerous to these places, like in Brazil. There's a book by Dave Zirin, Brazil's Dance with the Devil, that covered a lot of this when Brazil had the World Cup and the Olympics back to back. And what happened? They ended up impeaching their president. They had all of this political turmoil. And, you know, I don't think anyone was well off for any of that happening. And the World Cup being in South Africa. Look, I mean, it is good to have these events in African countries. I mean, that is part of the world. But at the same time, there's so much exploitation, as I'm sure you, Rachel, know just from covering, the exploitation is out of control.
Yeah, it's a really difficult balance. You know, you look at a country like Morocco, which has long wanted to host the World Cup, would, you know, I don't know whether hosting the World Cup would improve that country's fortunes or make them more, you know, or decrease them, in other words, because, you know, I mean, it might plunge so much into building stadiums at FIFA's behest that it would be detrimental to the economy. On the flip side, I'm sure it would be a huge boon for tourism and you know, other businesses and so on.
Yeah. It's that's always the key exchange in these deals, is the impact will it be positive or negative? There'll always be those economic impact studies to see that they're positive. And then you talk to the actual people who are there, and they might have a different story to tell. Rachel, I just want to thank you so much for taking the time and giving us such great insight on all these topics today. We really appreciate it. And you will continue, of course, to break news on all of these topics for the Wall Street Journal, as you have done so often. So thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Rachel, a treat. Thank you.
Thanks so much, guys. Good luck. Take care.
This country was built on a distinctly American work ethic. But today, work is in trouble. We've outsourced most of our manufacturing to other countries. And with that, we sent away good jobs and diminished our capability to make things. American Giant is a clothing company that's pushing back against this tide. They make a variety of high-quality clothing and activewear, like sweatshirts, jeans, dresses, jackets, and so much more. All made right here in the USA, from growing the cotton to adding the final touches. So when you buy American Giant, you create jobs for seamsters, cutters, and factory workers in towns and cities across the United States. And it's about more than an income. Jobs bring pride, purpose. They stitch people together. If all that sounds good to you, visit American-Giant.com and get 20% off your first order when you use code STAPLE20 at checkout. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with promo code STAPLE20.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.